You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here is the founder and your host, Maria Fuller.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I'm the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Before we get started, let's make sure you know where to find me. You can find more information about our education and community platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Raising a Powerful Girl. Make sure to connect with us on social media to find out our latest news, learn tips and tricks, submit your questions, and continue our enlightening conversations. And now, let's get on with today's show. Here's the scary reality. Most girls do not want to be leaders. Research indicates most girls define leadership and bravery as something heroic. In fact, only one-third of middle school girls today believe that they can be a leader, and the number goes down as they get older. Unfortunately, the data proves girls have an uphill battle. Research proves that girls pride themselves on perfectionism and therefore avoid taking risks that could help them grow. They hate conflict, so they don't end up practicing self-advocacy or communicating during difficult conversations. To avoid being labeled and bossy, they turn away from leadership roles. On top of these internal roadblocks, girls feel society's triple bind. Be confident, but not conceited. Be smart, but not one like a know-it-all. Ambition is good, but trying too hard is too bad. Be assertive, but only if it does not upset anyone. My guest today is Laura Clydesdale. Her goal is to shed light on these issues that affect girls so heavily. And of course, helping her daughter to navigate these tough issues is her top priority. But by chronicling their journey, she also strives to help other girls along the way. Laura writes, her daughter approves, and they post. Well, welcome, Laura. It's so great to have you here today. And I'm really excited about our conversation because when I first found out about you, someone actually sent me your Pinterest page and I started scrolling through and reading some of your blog posts. And I was like, oh my gosh, kindred spirit, this woman shares my brain. And it's such an exciting, you know, thing to meet someone else that is so passionate about helping this next generation of girls, you know, really develop their full potential to become powerful women that are going to make that change that we're desperately need in the world. So I would love to start with you just telling our listeners a little bit about you and, you know, what has brought you to where you are in your journey right now.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me here. And I agree. I feel like, you know, you're like a long lost sister. It's like, oh my gosh, we complete each other's sentences. Well, it goes back to, I was in auditing and finance, all real dry stuff, but that was back in my early life. So I'm really kind of geek out on research and things like that. But I also have a lot of interpersonal skills and I switched my career into leadership development for executives. So I was an executive coach. I did organizational development, those types of things. And I coached men and women throughout their careers. And when my daughter hit about 10, I started to notice that she was exhibiting some of the same career derailing traits that some of my female executive clients were exhibiting. And I was like, oh my gosh, does it start when you're 10 on the playground in middle school? And it was really such an eye opener for me. And at first I thought, you know, this is going to be easy. This is what I do for a living, piece of cake. You know, not in my house would I let her go down this path. Well, I started to research some things, but they didn't really have a lot out there for girls' leadership. And I know a lot of people talk about having strong and powerful girls. You know, that was all girl power was, you know, really starting to, you know, become huge. But strangely, there wasn't a lot of resources. So I was turning to my adult research for my female executive clients. And I was trying to figure out a way to use that research, maybe change the exercises, talk about it in a way that a 10-year-old girl could understand. And we started having conversations and we started doing a few, you know, a few exercises here and there. And I started to make some traction with her a little bit. My husband said, and I had a journal, by the way, I was keeping track of some things. And my husband says, you should start writing a blog. And I was like, no, I'm not a blogger. And now you found my blog.
Awesome.
I just got so passionate about it. I realized that I needed to share what I was going through, what my daughter was going through, because I realized, and as I saw her friends, a lot of them are going through the exact same thing.
Yeah. So what I love is that we share so many parallels in stories on how we came to the point where we are, you know, with what the work that we're both doing. And myself, I saw so much when I was working, you know, I've been very involved with women entrepreneurs for years, helping them with their own businesses and growing their businesses and, you know, working with the teens and tweens. And just like you, I kept seeing these same repetitive themes that I would see in the adult women that were entrepreneurs, the things that were holding them back, and, mm-hmm. and starting to come up with these teens and tweens. Can you share a little bit about what it was that you started to see and, mm-hmm. and those similarities?
Well, it was fascinating. It happened one night at about 2 a.m. I heard her moving around in her room. This is the epiphany night. And I thought she was mucking around on, you know, I don't know what she was doing. So I wasn't very happy. I went in there and she was doing her homework at 2 a.m. She's 10. I mean, our school isn't some uber, you know, crazy school. I was like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I woke up and I was afraid it wasn't quite good enough. And I was like, you know, immediately perfectionism, you know, right. you know, red lights going on all over the place. And so I was kind of horrified. And so I started talking to her about that. And then, you know, obviously I want her to be a leader. So I was talking to her about maybe you should run for student council or things like that. She's like, I don't want to be a leader. And I'm like, well, what do you mean you don't want to be a leader? She goes, you know, that's like, what? In my house, you don't want to be a leader? I mean, leadership development. And she said, no, it's, I don't want to be a bossy girl. I don't want to be a know-it-all. I don't want to, or scary. What if they don't like me? And then the biggest one was, what if I make the wrong decision and then everybody hates me? And, you know, and I'm thinking, boy, she's saying it in such a simple way, but I know a lot of my female clients, if I said it that way, they would go, yep. They yeah. would say exactly the same thing. And a lot of women hold themselves back with perfectionism. So I had to retrain her. I had to start from ground zero with respect to what is leadership. And then we had to, you know, we had to tackle the perfectionism issue about, you know, wanting everybody to like you and, right. and all of that, which is another huge one. That's very, very big. And yeah. that also helps. And that also works very, dovetails right into relationships. Mm-hmm. I know you have younger girls than I do, but, third and seventh grade in particular, but the whole, it's a minefield, this girl relationships throughout this time. And it seems that some women can't shake that same behavior when they go into the workforce. They still think that that's the rule book that they have to operate under. And you get these, you know, you get some of these caricatures that happen. And there are a lot of women who shed it or who are somehow resilient. So that is sort of it. So those are some of the examples. So a couple examples that I can give you that, you know, she'll come home and I'll be like, whoa, blog article, time to get my research out. We got to work on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. So much resonates there with me. I would love to start with what your definition of leadership is, and then I'll share mine. I'm curious if where we are in the path of that.
I think we have the same definition personally. Yeah. I think before you can lead other people or you can lead other organizations, you have to lead yourself. Yes. And it starts there. And, you know, having that self-confidence,
right.
in who you are, knowing what you're good at and what you're not good at and being okay with that.
Yes.
Having a couple friends that you really trust and you can develop and be vulnerable with a little bit. It doesn't have to be, you have to share your deepest, darkest secrets. Some of those things are all have protective, we're discovering through research that those things have protective elements and help you become resilient as you move through life. And so if you don't, it's, you know, it's this silly, you know, analogy of a house. If you don't have a strong foundation, you know, forget about it. You're not going to be able to build anything bigger. And I think what we see is a lot of, and it's what my job was I was called in to help somebody who was already off the waterfall, who was already, you know, doing, like I said, career limiting behaviors that had been ingrained in her for many, many years. And by doing girls leadership and working on these sort of self-leadership stuff that, you know, you and I like to talk about, I think that is sort of like catching them upstream and, you know, they will be stronger, resilient and true leaders, whether or not they're a stay-at-home mom, they're still leading. They still will be leading themselves. They'll be leading their families. They may be, you know, they're, the opportunities to lead are endless, and you don't have to have a position or a title to call yourself a leader.
Yes. It's just, you talk and I get goosebumps because it's like, it's so, the synchronicity is amazing. But yeah, you know, when I think, I can't remember the first time someone called me a leader as an adult. I was always called a leader when I was younger. And I was also had the label words that your daughter was saying, you know, bossy and you know, know-it-all and all of those. I've had those thrown at me all my life. And I think the first time someone called me a leader, I kind of looked at them and I was like, I'm not a leader. And until I started, you know, diving into this space, you know, I realized that leadership is knowing who you are to the very core, what moves you, what drives you, what makes your heart sing, what you stand for, what you don't stand for.
Exactly.
And having the self-love and self-compassion and the independence and the courage to say, this is what I believe. This is what is right for me. This is what I won't stand for in the world, and going ahead into the world that way. And people like that become leaders because others that are followers in nature will see that and say, I want that as
right.
well. And so in order for you to lead, you have to know who you are. And we have to be helping girls to have that self-love and that self-confidence and that compassion and that independence and that drive. And you say resiliency, and resiliency is so important in girls. And I'm sure, you know, and you've seen it with your executives. You know, we're here in Newtown, Connecticut, where Sandy Hook tragically happened years yeah. back. And my daughter, my oldest, was in lockdown a couple miles away from Sandy Hook when it happened. And so wow. we had a lot of professional help coming in to help children cope with the aftermath of a big event. And one thing that I learned and I loved was this concept of resiliency. Mm-hmm. And what we see is that when children go through hard times or tragedy or, you know, a divorce, anything, it doesn't have to be something as monstrous as Sandy Hook. The ones that do best, that bounce back, that move forward, are those that are resilient. And right. the professional that we were working with gave a great example. If you take a rubber band, and we want to teach girls to be rubber bands. And mm-hmm. so every day we need to teach them how to stretch a little bit and stretch and become a little bit tighter and then come back in and be able to come back in and center on the day. And so what they encouraged me, and this kind of started my awakening to moving, to empowering my daughter more, was I needed to do something every day with her that challenged her, whether right. emotionally or mm-hmm. physically or intellectually. We needed to stretch that rubber band because we needed to keep that rubber band stretching. Because if you take a rubber band and you throw it in a drawer and just leave it there for years, it dries out, it withers, and when you stretch it once, it snaps.
Right.
And so nice. We don't want mm-hmm. that, because that snap is what we're trying to avoid.
Exactly.
And it ties into the leadership.
Totally. And, you know, Carol Dweck, I'm sure many mm-hmm. of your listeners know a lot about her, but for those who don't, you know, there's a very simple research that she did, which is she gave every girls and boys, just she did resiliency testing, a simple puzzle. And then for one group, she told the group, you know what, you did such a great job on that puzzle because you must be really smart. Mm-hmm. And then another one, they said, wow, you worked really hard. And the ones who worked really hard then chose a harder puzzle next, versus the group that was told that they were smart, that they just did, you know, they chose the easier puzzle because they wanted to keep up the appearances of being smart. And what we're finding is this notion of perfectionism that girls tend to really get into is the exact same thing. They want to be viewed as smart. They want to be viewed as perfect. And when they do that, they don't take challenges as often. They don't take risks as often, like you were talking about. So you're doing a great service to your daughter by having her do this, because when they realize that they can, if they fail, for instance, it's over time, they realize it's not so bad when you fail. But the best part is the failures won't be as often as the successes, and the successes have this exhilarating upside and self-confidence boosting effect that happens on you, and you crave it. You crave that feeling more and more, and you're able to weather the failures or the, maybe something traumatic that happens, like you said, that your children, I'm very sad to hear that they had to see that. I think the most resilient people who've gone through some of these terrible, terrible tragedies, if you read any of their stories, they were people who were not perfectionists. They were people who were okay with taking risks, and they were comfortable with failing a couple times and realizing it wasn't the end of the world.
Yeah. And something that I've done, because I'm very aware of the labeling. Language mm-hmm. has always been something that's really interesting to me mm-hmm. and important. The feeling of excitement and anxiety is the same feeling in our bodies, but we choose to label it depending on our situation.
Exactly.
And with my girls, when they're doing something, and a lot of this is reinforced in their school, they're in Montessori, which reinforces this idea, is we don't use the word failure in our home. Failure for us is giving up on something when it didn't work out mm-hmm. the first time you tried it. So the word that I use is in our home is pivot. And so when something happens and we're doing something and it doesn't work the way we want it to, we look at it as a pivot point. And so
I love that.
So here's a pivot point. We've hit this block. This isn't working. I think I had a great example with my oldest, a couple years back. She wanted to make, I think it was like lemon blueberry pancakes for dinner one night. So we were doing backwards night for dinner. And I thought I had ricotta cheese, and I realized I didn't. And she got really upset. Little things upset them especially when they have in their idea what they want to do. And she's like, oh no, this isn't going to be good now. And everything. And I said, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. This is awesome. And she's like, why? I was like, we have a pivot moment. And she's like, what's that? And I said, well, we had a plan. And we realize we can't do our plan. So let's get creative and create something new and something different. Let's look in the fridge. Let's look in the pantry. What can we do that's different? And I think we ended up using like strawberry yogurt or something. And she was like, this is amazing. And so it was great because I had that one experience where it worked so well. So when she's doing other things, whether it's a project with school or even a relationship with a friend, and things aren't going the way she wants, or she's not happy with it, then I say to her, well, you have a pivot. You have a chance to pivot right here, right now. You have a chance to look at what's going on, what you don't like about it, what you want to see, and what can we do differently to try to get a better outcome.
I love that. I hope it's okay if I start using that with my daughter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, what I've seen, especially with women entrepreneurs and with girls, is that we're really good at creating in our mind what we want and what we want to see. And what happens is that when it doesn't work the way we had expected it to work or had envisioned it to work, then we think that there's something wrong.
Right.
And the reality is, as a 10-year entrepreneur, every time that happens, I have found that it's because I've needed to pivot with something in the business, in parenting my child, in a relationship. I needed to stop and see what's going on here. What am I missing? What do I need to change? And when I started looking at life in that sense, instead of blocks or failures or things that didn't work right, but as pivot points, it brought me closer to something that maybe I didn't even know I wanted mm-hmm. or something better than I had imagined. Wow. And the stress was taken away of failing or not going right. And it turned it to excitement of, I have the opportunity here to create something better or to do something better or to make a better choice.
What I love about it is it institutes this idea of a gray. instead of a black and white.
Right.
So that's why I think it feels safer, because you know that there are lots of, I mean, pivoting, you could go 180 pivot, or you could just do a 2-degree pivot. It does not have to be yes or no, a binary decision. And I really love that expression. The other thing I think what it does is it protects against taking that that risk in the first place, that leap in the first place. Because what a lot of times girls will do and women will do is they won't apply for a position because they don't have all of, you know, the requirements on the job application. You know, they're just, what women don't realize is they everybody throws in, you know, the kitchen sink on a job application. You know, these are the things we really want to have in this magical person. Very few people will have all of those things, but a lot of times that will hold women back because they're rule followers, they're perfectionists, they want it, so they'll wait, or they'll go and take a class, and then they'll do a seminar, and then they'll read a book, and then they'll do all this stuff before they feel like they can even, and then they still have imposter complex when they jump in, if they jump in at all, because a lot of times they'll just say, I'm still not ready yet. But to know that you're always pivoting, you can always adjust. It's like sailing, right? You know, you just get out there and then you have to keep making these minor adjustments to keep yourself going. It's not like you have to be perfect and then you jump in and it's all going to be great or you're going to fail. It's so I love that. I love that. And I'm going to steal that. I hope it's all right.
Yes. Use it. Use it. The more people that use it, the better. That makes me so happy. So happy. So what are some things that you've worked with your daughter that you've seen some success with changing, you know, how she views leadership?
So, well, one thing I did is I actually ran an exercise that was specifically designed for adults, and it was from the Center for Leadership, Creative Leadership. And what they did is I think it was over 2 decades, they had some professors who would ask students in college to draw a picture of what they felt was the ideal leader. And surprisingly, 3 images kept coming up. Now, this was just free form, like they didn't give them any guidelines, but 3 images kept coming up as the most popular. One was a picture of a handshake, another one was a picture of a conductor, and another one was a picture of a warrior on a horseback. And so then they decided, let's just take those 3 pictures, since they, you know, keep coming up, and let's ask, you know, adults in the workforce, what is the ideal leader if you could choose the 3? Turned out they're equally viewed as leaders. They're all different styles of leaders, but they're all leaders. So I actually took those pictures right off the internet and I sat down with my daughter. What I was going to say is, unless you were an executive woman, there's the only thing that was interesting is women rarely chose the warrior on horseback. They chose the conductor or the handshake, unless they were executive leaders. They tended to view it more like they could see more of the, I don't know what you want. So the symbolism there rather than the literal authoritarian. So they had that. So I was like, okay, this is curious. I'd like to see what my daughter, who's 10 or 11, she was in 5th grade actually. You know, what does she think? So the first thing she immediately pointed to the warrior on horseback. Now, this is women who never really would choose the warrior on horseback, except if you were an executive leader. And yet my daughter thought that's the way it had to be. And then I asked her, I said, well, do you see yourself as that leader? She goes, no. And I'm like, okay, so which one did you think? So which one do you identify with better? And she pointed to the handshake. And I said, oh, you know, this is interesting. So girls tend to think there was a right way and a wrong way to be a leader. Like there was this stereotypical leader. And when you think about it, think about what your kids are learning in school. They're all warriors on horsebacks, right? They did something so audacious and heroic and crazy, whether you were female or not. They're scary stuff that they did. They made history books.
And they're males.
And most of them are males. But even Rosa Parks, that was scary, right? What she did. And so I realized that, well, we had to really change this. So I actually asked the teacher if I could do the same exercise in the class with the boys and the girls. And sure enough, I swear to God, every single girl chose the warrior on horseback. And when I said, if you don't see yourself as that and you choose to be something else, and you don't identify with that person, you can choose something else. Mass exodus. I think there was only one girl still saying, yeah, I want to be the warrior on horseback. Everybody bailed. Everybody wanted to be either a conductor or a handshake. And so it, I don't know what happens as you get, they got older, you know, they finally realize it, but young girls are afraid of leadership and because they don't see themselves as that ideal, heroic, audacious leader. So that was the first exercise I did with her. And I just with her and her girlfriends, we just dispelled that whole myth. And we started talking about leadership in completely different ways. Like, what about this as being a leadership? You know, are you a leader if you do this? Yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not a warrior on horseback. You know what I mean? So, so that worked really well. There was a lot of work I did with her friends. And one of the big ones was this idea that there's either, you either have enemies or you have best friends. Mm. And if your best friend does something that's disappointing, then suddenly they're not your friends anymore. Now I'm exaggerating because they're really young, but as they get older, it can get in seventh grade, they still have a lot of the same stuff. You betrayed me, or you looked at me weird in the hall, or you said something, or, you know, you didn't tell me what was wrong, you know, and then they just blow it out of proportion. There are lots of different kinds of friendships, and there are lots of different kinds of coworkers, and there's lots of different kinds of acquaintances, and showing the spectrum and showing that it was okay. And so actually, one she was with, she was hanging with a hater, and it was just, you know, she was really bummed out every night about this one girl. And I'm like, okay, well, let's start working on how to wean off the friendship, and slowly. You don't have to do it right away and break it off. But so that was a big one that we worked a lot on.
Yeah. That's one that we've already worked on, that one with my daughter. And, because she's had some of those instances where she's outgrowing the friendship, you know, they're, mm-hmm. Third grade girls, and their relationships are changing. And what we did one night is I grabbed a big poster board, and what one side we wrote down, you know, how do we want our friends to make us feel? What is a good friend? Mm-hmm. How do they make us feel when we're around them?
Exactly.
We wrote all those down, and we wrote down, you know, what are some good things to do for others when we're a good friend? And we wrote those down. And then on the other side, we wrote, you know, someone that might not be a good friend, what are some things they might do that are a sign that they might not be a good friend? Something mm-hmm. that we don't like when people do. And we wrote that all down. Mm-hmm. And we did that exercise first without even naming names of friends. And then I started going through some of her friends, and I said, where does this person lie? Where do they fall in this area?
And exactly.
I started talking about it. And then I asked her, where do you lie in this area
right.
with certain people? Where do you fall? Because mm-hmm. I think it's important for them to know, because we're not all perfect. And right. sometimes we're not good friends to other people. And that might be a sign that we're not a good mix.
Right.
You know, and we started talking, and I started talking about my friends. And, you know, I've had periods of my life where I was closer with some people than other, and because relationships ebb and flow. And I just talked about that. You know, I said, right now I love being with, you know, this person and that person because they make me feel this, because when I'm with them, you see that I'm always happy and I'm always laughing. And I know I can go there and just, you know, on a day that I'm feeling sad, and be really happy. Or they will call me when they know I'm going through something and say, let's go to lunch. You know, that's right. what I choose. And then, and I'll say to her, how many friends do I have that I spend a lot of time with?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a lot. That exercise is phenomenal, and I think it's great, but we also have to remember that they have to go to school with these kids every right. single day, and you and I get to choose. And I think that's, you know, it seems so easy for, yeah. and that's what I realized when I was talking to her and I was trying to guide her. I was looking at it. I said the exact same thing to her. Like, well, I don't choose to be with that person, but the reality is she has to see her every single day. So there's a developmental thing that happens for girls and for boys. They have to find a tribe outside of their family, because that's just part of growth and becoming an adult and being independent. And they shift from tribe to tribe. And a lot of that is the popular group, or the, you know, that's how you get all these, you know, the Breakfast Club groups that they always, right. you know, back in our I don't know if they have millennials listening, they probably don't even know what the Breakfast Club is, but the jocks and then the, you know, the burnouts and then, you know, the popular crowd. And they have to experiment with that and they have to see where they fit and they, this, the draw to be in a tribe and to be belonged or to belong to a tribe and accepted is incredibly powerful. And so when something doesn't work out, they feel kind of trapped and they feel like, you know, they're stuck in it. So it's important for them to, it's what I really like what you did with that exercise with your daughter is she, you know, you helped her decide what the ground rules are for the tribe that she wants to be a part of,
right,
and the people that she wants to be a part of. And that is key. And when my daughter was going through this problem with this girl, what we discovered was we finally put our finger on what it was. She was, this girl was really jealous, and really in like in a bad way. And not like healthy competition way, which I, so, but those are nuances, right? There are some friends that you have that push you to be your best and that you have a healthy competition with. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if somebody has a success that, you know, you're sort of jealous of, like literally, one of her girlfriends, got on Broadway and she turned to me and she goes, "Is it okay if I feel jealousy?" Like, of course. I go, "But do you want her to break her legs so she doesn't succeed?" She goes, "Of course not. Right. You know, I'm so happy for her." I go, "That's healthy." You know, so it's but you know, when you're young, you feel terrible that you feel these emotions, and it's important to, you know, have that open dialogue with your daughter, right, to figure out what exactly is happening. This girl was tearing down my daughter's self-esteem and so jealous that it made her successes. She was embarrassed about her successes. So she would never tell, she would ask, you know, "What did you get on that test?" And my daughter would say she got an A. And she goes, "Of course you did, little Miss Perfect," you know, or something like that. That's the example that she, right, would often do. And so that is not a healthy relationship. No. That's somebody who is not letting you crow from the rooftop. Your best friends are the ones that let you crow from the rooftop and help you to do it.
Thank you so much, Laura. I love this conversation, and I know we shared some really incredible ideas, information, and ways to help with girls' leadership today, and so much more. To find out more about Laura, you can find her at www.lauraclydesdale.com. To hear the rest of this interview, as we further explore this topic, please join our community at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. And become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details.
Thanks for joining us. This is the EWN Podcast Network.